It's that time of the year where all the spirits come out to play, where terror grips the streets and your darkest fears come to life. Pull in close as we journey through the darkness into the realms of the Monster Cast.
And hello out there, everybody in podcast land. Welcome back to the Front Row Podcast, the podcast of people who actually like movies, right here on NPR Illinois. And again, Jeremy Gechner here, and if you are listening to my voice in October, you are listening to Monster Cast here on NPR Illinois. Of course, we went way overboard this year because, well, like, what else do we have to do, people? All we have to do is record in our homes nowadays. But I am very, very excited to do this special episode of Monster Cast because we have a very, very special guest here. So a couple years ago, Hulu started the Huluween Horror Short Film Festival, and my wife and I, Sarah, we've been ranking them every year. We're going to do the same this year, although Hulu decided to do like 30 of them this year, so they must have hated us or something. But a couple years ago, the very first year, I believe, we ranked this guy's film, The Rizzle, as our top choice for that year's Huluween Film Festival. I am so, so psyched to welcome Josh Tanner to the Front Row. Josh, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Jeremy, both for having me and for choosing The Rizzle as your number one.
You know what? Every time I watch it, I'm just like, right choice. It freaks me out every single time I watch it. And thank you so much for being here from Brisbane, Australia. Gosh, man, you are talking to me from the future. Like, that is so nuts.
Indeed I am.
Well, either way, this is going to be a really, really fun conversation because I just love horror shorts because they're so accessible. They're so there. And like, I don't know, there's just something about horror shorts that always gets to me. And like, they scare me a lot more than full length horror movies sometimes, I think.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I have a theory behind that. I think the theory is that with shorts, you can just be way more mysterious and you never have to explain things.
Exactly.
And the unexplained is way scarier. So it's such a, like a catch 22 when you have, you know, something that gets turned from a short into a feature. Cause you're like, oh great, I get to explore these more, you know, these elements, but then it's like, oh, it's not as scary.
Like, no, you're right. That's like that old Hitchcock principle, right? Like your imagination makes things way scarier than I could ever make, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, there's so much to be afraid of with The Rizzle, and I can't wait to dive into it with you here. But this is something we ask to everybody their first time on the Front Row, and it's totally unprepared, and it's always the dagger in the heart question, especially for filmmakers. So, Josh Tanner, what's your favorite movie? Yep, see, that's the reaction.
You know, you've made it difficult because I was expecting, what's your favorite horror movie?
I know, right? We're going to get
straight there.
We're going to get to that one.
Look, you know, my whole thing is always, when I'm asked this question, is always like, what's my favorite movie opposed to what do I think is the best movie? Because my favorite movie is not a good movie.
Sure.
And it hurts my heart to say this, but like, that it's not a really good movie, but 1989's Batman is my favorite movie.
I love that movie. Are you kidding me? That's a great movie. That is peak Burton.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, the Burton world of Batman is got a treasured place. Particularly Batman Returns, because it borders on a horror movie.
Yes, it really does. Every time I see that movie, like, Danny DeVito gives me nightmares. It's just like, that
absolutely.
Is, ugh, God. He bites absolutely. A guy's nose off. I mean,
I just love that there were Happy Meals attached to that movie.
It's great. That's exactly what I was just about to say. It's just like, oh, he's biting guys' nose off, blood's gushing everywhere. He's talking about, like, killing babies and stuff. It's like, here's your Happy Meal toy kit.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man. Well, we're going to have you back on to talk those movies, because I could talk for days about the Tim Burton Batman.
I love them.
Oh, man. He's just – it's good. So deliciously weird. I just love it.
Yeah.
But, you know, Josh, you know, I always love to talk to people who make films because it's just a fascinating thing to me to know how they got there. You know, I've worked on a few film sets and stuff as like a DIT and a little bit of editing, but I've never been in a director's chair. So how did you find yourself making movies? Give me the superhero origin story of Josh Tanner here.
I mean, it's super cliche. It's what you'll probably hear from everyone is they got a hold of their parents' video camera and then made the dumbest videos known to the world with animals and friends and whatever you could have access to.
Uh-huh.
And then that sort of, as I became a teenager, that sort of evolved into skateboarding videos with my skater friends and I. And then I was like, you know, if I keep skateboarding, I'm going to die or break bones or something like that. It's, you know, but the whole while just very much being enamored by filmmaking and films and just knowing that in my heart that somehow, not that I quite understood, you know, the realities of that being a job, mm-hmm. knew that's where my heart was. And yeah. And then when I turned, 20, I moved because I grew up in a rural town in Australia. I moved at age 20 to the city and started working my way into the film industry. You know, just starting off in camera department, like mm-hmm. as a DIT actually. Yep. And this was right at the very beginning when the Red camera just hit.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of fell through the cracks right there, which was great. It was like, there was no like, I was like, hey, do you know how to use a Mac computer? Yes. Come in over here.
Yeah, exactly. And
handle our data.
It's like, we got a new job for you. I know. That's always fun, isn't it? You're just like sequestered off by yourself, like here, like log all these.
It's like, oh my gosh. And then, so I did that for a while. I, you know, was editing as well. So very similar to some of the things that you do. And then I just, kept making short films and I met my partner who is she's now my wife, Jade Vandelay. She co-writes with me and produces for me, and we've just been making films ever since 2008, and we've just bit by bit chomped away at it and made a few shorts, and
well,
the rest is history.
One of those shorts continues to be the thing that I come back to over and over. Let's talk about the Rizzle here, because this is fascinating to me. Like, because I'm gonna get into all of them, but you're playing with like 15 different like fears in this one. Because it's just like there's not one specific thing to be afraid of. There's like obvious things to be afraid of in this short, but there's also less obvious ones that I think people might have missed. But just a very, very quick rundown of it, not to give too much away. We'll give a spoiler warning when we have to. But, you know, the basic premise of this short is a young lady is watching dance videos, like old 1920s dance videos on her computer one night. And after one's done, there's a suggested video of something called the Rizzle. And already I'm freaked out by the screen cap of this thing. And then, you know, she watches it and it's like, I mean, we'll get into it, but let's just say it's a very creepy dance and a very creepy song that goes with it there too. But you know, there's no information on this. There's no views, no description, except for one little sentence that says, "Try the Rizzle if you dare." She does try the dance with the video, and let's just say bad things ensue. So we'll get into spoilers when we have to. But you know, Josh, just talk to me about the Rizzle here. Like, where did this idea come from? You know, like, how did this germinate that you would had this idea about this like demonic dance type of a short horror short here?
You know, I think it's a bit of a meld of different influences. First, maybe the most obvious one is the Ring, mm-hmm. particularly the American one. That was the first Ring film that I was introduced to.
Yeah. The Gore Verbinski one, right?
Yeah, it scared the shit out of me. And, usually a movie, like a horror movie, back then, like I've sort of grown a very thick skin with horror movies, but back then, usually I would, you know, watch a horror movie a couple of times and I was good, but I couldn't stop watching that movie, and every time I was still just as terrified as the, and then as filmmaking sort of became something that I knew I really wanted to do for a passion, and I started exploring, you know, the great directors. I got hooked onto David Lynch and Stanley Kubrick. And I felt like, and Jade, my wife, is also a big fan of Kubrick and David Lynch. And we both really loved the The Shining for the 1920s vibes, and also David Lynch's work has a little bit of that sort of old Hollywood creepiness to it. And I think sort of The Ring and those sort of influences sort of all mashed together when Hulu and Fox Digital came calling. I think they're called 20th Digital Studios now,
mm-hmm.
Came calling about doing some shorts. We like, let's do this. And we'd actually written a script like a year prior for a different film funding thing, and it didn't go through. But basically we just came up with this idea of like, okay, let's make it something 1920s-y, because it's always been this creepy fascination with the 20s. It's, I don't know whether it's the scratchiness of the, you know, the footage, or the scratchiness of the sound when there was like sound recordings of music, uh-huh. and stuff, because it was the silent era. And also something in silent movies they used to do a lot was cake the actor up with a lot of pale makeup, right. to make them their faces stand off on screen. And it just made them look like they belonged more on a bloody mortuary,
yeah.
than a movie screen. And it was like, that's just so creepy. So we sort of went down that route, and I don't know how we came up with the idea of it being a dance, but something about, you know, ritualistic things, conjuring things. We just thought, I don't think we've seen a dance sort of open up a supernatural rift. We thought that would be really cool. And we wrote it, and then Hulu and Fox came calling, and we sent it, and they said yes. And we were just like, wow, this is going to be fun. And
yeah.
What's crazy is that from the green light of saying we got the funds to do it to delivering it was less than a month.
Oh, it was, wow.
An insane timeline, which we've never made a film in that.
No.
Made a short film in that timeline prior or since or will ever.
No. It
was bonkers, because if you think about it, like locations, you got to cast it, you got to design the dance, you've got to, you know, shoot it. We had a 2-day shoot, then you got to do all the post-production. It was, uh-huh. And we even shot on celluloid. We shot on film.
Looks very authentic.
We did. We absolutely did. And I think Fox were like, are you sure about that? Yeah. But we shot it in digital as backup as well, just in case, you know.
Sure, yeah.
Interesting tidbit, actually, was that we shot two rolls of film because we got a hold of like a 30-year-old roll of film that was actually like from the year I was born. And we were like, let's shoot this. This will look like crap. And then we got another roll of film that was black and white film that was like, it wasn't Kodak or anything. It was just kind of like some sort of cheaper brand of black and white film. And then it turned out that the 30-year-old film looked perfect. It looks like it was made yesterday. And
oh, God.
The 30-year-old film looked like scratchy as hell and crap, and it was great. So we shot this 30-year-old roll of film for nothing.
God. Of course. That's how it goes.
Well, but it gave the aesthetic, and it made it look like legitimate. And we,
oh, yeah. And I think you're right. Like, there's the inherentness of like watching old timey like footage, you know, like right when cameras were starting to get used more widely. And you're right. Like right when they were figuring out how to put sound with all of it, you know, like there is just something so inherently, and you're right. You're absolutely right with the makeup too. It's just like you watch old movies and old clips and stuff from that time period. And yeah, it just, it doesn't look right. You know, it looks just a little off.
It's very weird. And yeah. You know, particularly then as well, they didn't shoot at the frame rates that we shoot today. Like, you know, in film, we shoot 24 frames. But back then, I think they shot like 18. And then at times, they didn't even have a mechanized or like a machine sort of running frame, like camera. So they had to hand crank it. And that was like, if you had good people, you could probably make it work. But even the imperfections of that, it was just that was a little, it wasn't normal, and it just looked a bit freaky. So we shot, I think we shot like 20, 25, and then we shot like 16 frames or something like that, and we switched between them to give that sort of hand. We couldn't get a hold of a hand cranked camera. Turns out they don't make them anymore.
Yeah. You know, I think you got to go to a museum for that nowadays.
Yeah, I thought of just breaking into a museum and stealing a camera that way.
Well, yeah, and well, you talked about like, so that's like the first big, like, you know, because whenever I like do like horror reviews or anything, I always like, what's the bigger fear that some things are happening there? And you already talked about one, which is like, you're right, like the ritualistic thing. And I love that about this short is that, you know, like you referenced The Ring, and The Ring, you just have to watch something, you know, like in this one, yeah. You actually have to partake in it. So there's kind of like a, well, you did it. So, you know, absolutely. Like, so, you know, it's kind of like yeah. a, here's what you get for it type thing. And I like that about this.
Yeah. It's the Candyman. It's the Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
But this one is, yeah, it's, I just knew that like, if there was something like in a dance, there was something that could then be echoed later that shouldn't, the character shouldn't be able to hear.
Right.
And there was a rhythmic element to that music and to that dance that could then be twisted into a really scary thing when it shouldn't be happening. So when we realized that the whole dance thing could be really cool.
Yeah. And speaking of that, like, so who came up with the dance? Because it's mixing a lot of different influences, because I've done some dancing and some live theater in my time. And like, you know, you've got some flapping, you got some tap dancing in here. But I mean, there's also just like the way that like the contortions are happening in some of that, like it definitely looks unnatural. And like, so you could definitely see it being like, if you watch this and were totally creeped out, you're right. But if you watched it and thought like, oh, well, you know, it's just old timey dancing, you'd also be right. So like, who came up with this? How did that kind of get going there?
Yeah, it was a really cool process. I Holly, who played Elena, the girl, and Steve, who played the dancing man, they're both dancers. So that was first and foremost, it was getting people that had a dancing background, because I actually got them to design it with me. I didn't really design it. I kind of sat there and watched them do it, and they tried things out, and we kind of deconstructed the music and was like, oh, this bit sounds like it should be a bit, you know, a flourish here or a flourish there. Mm-hmm. Like, cause I've never had anything to do with dance in my life. So I didn't know where to even start, but we like blocked out a like this. And also this was like the day before the shoot. So this wasn't like figured out, like this wasn't figured out like weeks ahead. Again, we finished the movie in like maybe 3.5 weeks.
I still can't even believe that. Like that's just nuts.
So the day before we were like, just sat down and they just tried some things out. And I don't know how many iterations we went through of it, but I was just looking for things that felt like angular, like, you know.
Yes, exactly.
With the arms and things like that. Things that felt like of the period, but just felt very showy, but a little like antiquated, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I was looking for things that felt like you'd never throw them into a dance these days. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Oh no, it totally works, because you're right. Like there's like, you know, like I said, he's got like some like, you know, trenches and, you know, like some like, you know, time steps and everything from typical tap dancing. But yeah, you're right. It's like when he does those angular arm things and he's like kind of going back and forth, and it's like, I'm just like, I do not like this guy. I'm like, he's making me uncomfortable. But you're right, though, that like part of that, though, is like kind of just the facial expressions he has, too, because there is that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny you mentioned Burton's Batman, because it's a very Joker-ish looking smile.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like an unnatural smile there. But what I love so much is that little detail that when you linger on him at the end, both times when you linger on the very end shot after the bow, the eyes are just screaming and like, but the face like won't move. And I absolutely just love that. That was pretty intentional, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Oh man. It creeped me out so much. But another big fear though, that I kind of caught the second time I watched it though, is like this fear of like, things you find on the internet, you know, just kind of like a general fear of the internet, you know, because like if I saw a video like that and you're sitting there, it's got no views, there's nothing on it, you know, you're just going to kind of be like, well, that's weird. Like I just watched it at least, shouldn't it say one or something like that, you know? So like, was that something that you were thinking about too? Just kind of like this, like, man, you know, like beware of stuff you find online or something like that.
Absolutely. Like it, you know, it's so easy to fall down YouTube holes. Like it really is. And it's just, it is a hole. It's like any kind of social media and stuff as well. Not that I really use social media anymore. I have an Instagram. Mm-hmm. But even that is like when they recommend things for you, it's endless. You're just looking at pictures of cakes and you're like, I started at like games consoles looking right. at games. How did this turn into cakes? I don't get it. And so like, I that was just inherent that it would be like, she'd find a way to, but not that there's that much of like a hole. Like she's, I don't know. Who knows what she started off looking at?
Right, exactly. She was probably just checking her email, looking at insurance rates or something.
It doesn't play on screen very much because we sort of, sadly, the pace of the short works very well. We did have a few establishing shots early in one of the early edits where you saw that Elena was a dancer, like she had some trophies and there were some photos of her dancing and stuff like that. So you kind of, the plan was to kind of go, oh, this is why she agrees to it. Cause you have so many movies where it's like, oh, why did she do that? You know, right. She knows that, but it's like, if she had been a dancer, it's like, oh, she's being challenged. Her ego's being challenged.
Well, honestly, you know, I kind of just figured that because like, you know, when she's sitting there actually dancing with it, I'm just like, oh, she's got some moves. She must be a dancer. You know, I just kind of went with it.
I think that internet whole thing is really very much present in that sort of idea. In earlier drafts, like when we had sort of applied for this short like the year earlier, there was way more stuff. Like she like went to a chat board and someone like it was way
oh,
more.
I got you.
So the whole process of sort of developing it was like making it simple, 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 which sort of ended up being exactly the right way to go.
Oh yeah.
It's also the weird thing is like, I think this short dropped right as TikTok.
Oh, really?
Either launched or like had.
I think
only
you're right.
Like a month before or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And everyone's like, they should do this on TikTok or they should do this, you know? And I was like, what the is a TikTok? and it's like, it's
and
basically.
Now none of us can forget.
Like you look at this film and it's basically a film about TikTok, but we had no idea what TikTok was.
You know what? We need to start that, man. We need to start the Rizzle TikTok challenge because I don't know though, dude. You never know, man. There's like some we can awaken something here. Well, and kind of along that vein. So here we go. Full spoiler warnings, people. If you haven't seen the Rizzle, it's 5 minutes. Go find it and watch it. Okay. Like, you know, like, but full spoiler warning here, but like, I got to commend you on the sequence, it all goes haywire for her. At first, I just love that you have it like near the 3 a.m. hour. You know, I think it's like 2 a.m.-ish. Yeah. But like, you know, you're kind of playing off that lore there, I think, you know, like the devil's hour and stuff like that. Yeah. But, you know, like the way that so slowly builds where we hear the tap, you know, the hoofing coming down there, but we don't really see, and you only ever give us very slight little things, you know, like glimpses of this thing as it's glitching towards her. You know, like, I'm hoping that was pretty deliberate too, right? Because you didn't want us to see the big creepy crawly thing too much, right?
No, just knew that like, okay, audience is going to know generally what he looks like. Mm-hmm. Or looked like at, you know, in that video, which was creepy enough. But I think like people are sort of literate enough with horror movies that, you know, that when you see him like that, you know, he's going to be way creepier when he finally shows up. So you want to sort of like hang on to that as much as possible. And we just knew that like the whole idea of a haunted dance or a dance sort of coming to take you, consume you, that there would be like almost like a shot that would be like a POV shot that rolls along the floor that like thumped and thumped in rhythm to, and we were like, oh, that's such a cool.
It was very effective.
so we knew that anything that was built around that would have to be very tiny glimpses or flashes. And you were just like, oh shit. And when he came right up to the camera, we shot that at like multiple passes with like, and that was film that moment as well. So we actually went from film to digital to film right at that last minute where she gets to show the sort of him capturing her and sucking her into.
Well, and I also love that, like, you know something bad's coming for you, but you still can't see it clearly. Like, that's even just freaky as hell, you know? Like, it's like something's coming for me. I know I'm in danger, but I don't know how.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, it just was fun. We just knew that we could make him really creepy right there.
And I mean, you made Elena at the end very creepy too. I mean, I honestly don't know which of them dancing freaks me out more. Her ending shot freaks me out way more because, you know, it's just that hopelessness aspect. Just like, oh, damn. Like she's there till somebody else finds her, I'm assuming. Well, I don't. Yeah. And you see, like, I have all these extra questions, but I don't really want to know. You know, like, that's the beauty of the short, you know? Like, I don't want to actually know. Like, I'm happy just thinking like, oh God, well, she's done. I'm not going to go dance the Rizzle anytime soon.
Look, I could tell you what I think happened.
Yeah, sure.
You'd like to know.
It came from your brain. Why not? Yeah, I think that's fair game.
Well, only because I noticed like in video comments, they're like, it's okay because she'll get let out. Like when someone else dance.
No, I don't think it's that way. You know what genre you're watching here, right, guys?
Yeah, she's not going anywhere. She's dancing for eternity on that stage.
Yeah. Ugh, and that's just, oh my God. Like, and even just the aspect of that, like the eyes again, like, you know, like it's just that utter hopelessness. Like,
yeah.
Oh man, it's very effective.
Yeah. At one point, I think we even shot that we had the dancing man sort of like when she's there on the stage smiling, that we had like the dancing man right in the back near the curtains.
Okay.
Where he was going to be like really faint just to, as a sort of blink and you miss it, just so people didn't think like, oh, that guy was a previous guy that had done the dance and he's off somewhere else. Just because, I mean, that guy's, he did, like, Steve did such a great job. I want that to be the demon. I want that to be the creepy guy.
If that's him every time, I'm just going to be like, no. Well, yeah, like, that's kind of like a very Mike Flanagan-y thing that you're talking about there, too, like a very Haunting of Hill House. Like, hey, everybody, there's something back there. Hopefully you saw it.
That would have been creepy. And if you didn't, still creepy.
Yeah, well, and I mean, kind of in that vein, though, and this is the thing that freaked me out the most is right when you cut into black and you see that other face right there for a split second. Now that is definitely a blink and you'll miss it. And I mean like that. So I mean, what exactly was the thinking there? Is that like the true face of what she is or of what took her? Or, you know, is that just kind of just the freakiness factor there?
I think it's the freakiness factor. I think that I often had dreams of just eyes and eyes and teeth in horror, like scary nightmares, basically.
Yeah.
And I just thought that, like, and it's not like, oh, it's just eyes and mouths are scary. They're not. But the absence of a nose, I don't know why. If you take a nose away from a face, it just becomes fucking terrifying.
Yeah, no, it is. You're right.
So that's where that sort of came from. What is it? There's some Bob the Killer. I remember there was some weird horror meme coming like from years ago where it was like a big smiley face and sort of beady eyes but no nose. And I was that's disturbing. So, yeah, I was trying to sort of add that sort of continuity in. And but definitely a sense that like that's the hold on her, you know what I mean? Like if we were going to put the guy behind her, it kind of shows that, you know, her and what this entity is within her. It's controlling her in this sort of 1920s hell world. Nether world.
Hellscape where everybody does the same creepy dance. Real quick, the music, where did that come from? Like, cause it's just as big of a character in this as the dance. I think it's very unsettling.
I mean, that's a journey in itself. Like when I started to prep the movie, I cut together like an animatic, which is basically like drawn storyboard images that were shot to shot to shot to shot and edited together with, you know, sound effects and, mm-hmm. and temp music. And this temp music, we found like an old track from 1919 or something like that, and was like, this is great, like this is definitely in the public domain. We designed the dance to it. We were like, this is our jam. And all the way from the very beginning, we'd set like a music supervisor on the task of like making sure that it was in the public domain.
Right.
2 days before delivery of the film, we find out Sony still owned the rights to this fucking old piece of music that no one living.
Like literally 100 years old. Public domain's like 75, isn't it? Come on.
but that's like the recording, but then there's the publishing. It's a whole different thing. And
yeah.
We were like, oh my God, we're not going to be able to use that track. Sony wants like $5,000 for this ancient piece of music.
That nobody else has listened to in years.
So we got this amazing composer, Ak Kimmins, on board, and he listened to the track. And because, again, like the edit was locked. Like the edit was locked. Everything was shot. We were 2 days away from like delivering the film. And he put together this, which ended up being better than the you know, track that we had planned it to. And it just worked wonderfully.
Yeah.
But it was true hell. For about 48 hours there.
Happy accidents, man. Happy accidents, because the music is great. Like it absolutely sounds like it comes from the 1920s, but it also sounds otherworldly. It sounds like it's a little off.
Yeah, it's got that weird mix of a little bit carnival-y, a little bit sort of set in that 20s jazz era, but something a little more sinister as well. Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh God, it works so well. So, you know, again, people, if you haven't seen The Rizzo, like, please just go watch it. It is going to freak you out. It's going to be the scariest thing you see. You know what? Watch it in bed, you know, watch it on your computer in bed, and then don't do the dance, because we don't want to invite the bad mojo here. But, you know, Josh, you are obviously, you've done so many other horror shorts as well. It's clear that you have a really good passion for it. I mean, do you find that, like, you already talked a little bit about it, but like, are you just more drawn to like shorts and stuff like that in your professional life and just kind of in general?
Look, I don't want to say it's an instant means, but it's, you know, features is ultimately where I go for sure. I just have been very lucky enough to have, the opportunities to make as many shorts as I have. You know, it's been wonderful to, sort of develop a voice as a filmmaker. And if you look at all my shorts, you'll probably notice that there's a sort of a, you know, a taste for modern history and twisting modern history things into genre pieces. And that's very much where my wife's passion lies. And so to be able to build a body of work that you can kind of go, oh, I see what he's really good at, is awesome. And just with the world of COVID going on at the moment, I'm equally as thankful that I'm doing another short. Just gonna shoot it in about 3 or 4 weeks from now.
Really?
Which also takes a little bit of something from history that is kind of really spooky and weird.
Nice.
Be on the lookout for that.
Well, yes, man, when that one's ready, we want to have you back on and talk about that. I just love all the stuff that you've done here. This one is just, again, like 2 years later, it still gets me. And there's been a lot of horror shorts out there, but this one I always keep coming back to, and I'm just like,
God,
there's something that just digs its claws into me with this one.
It's so funny because, like, you know, when Jade and I sort of started, you know, working on this, we're like, are people going to find this scary? Like, you know, the 1920s, like I feel really creeped out by that, but I don't know if I'm just weird and like, I just have this really strange, it's like, man, what's scary about the Charleston? You're a weirdo, man. Like, it's like,
everything is scary about the Charleston.
I'm so glad there are others like me, Jeremy.
Yeah. No, it's utterly fantastic there. But I have just one more question for you, though. Yeah. We are in MonsterCast month here at NPR Illinois. You know, we highlight so many horror films, and you obviously have a great love for the genre. If you had a couple of suggestions for people as we're coming up on Halloween here, what would what's on your Halloween movie watch list as we get near the season of the witch here?
I would have, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to pick one, and I'm going to pick one because I want people to watch this movie. It's so fucking good. Mm. And it is Australian. It's called Lake Mungo.
I've seen this. Oh my God. I love this movie.
Yes. I don't think I've been as scared by a movie since I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie came out in 2009, and so, like, since for 18 years, in the 18 year span since now, I have not seen a single movie that has been as scary as Lake Mungo. It is so scary. It's basically like a mockumentary, but its tone is just. It's
very unsettling. You're right, because it kind of like precursed. I mean, I don't know. I guess it was right around when Paranormal Activity was like making found footage popular again. But like, you're right. Yeah. There is just a realness and a rawness to that one that like you can't shake. Like it just sticks with you.
And it's, you know, multiple watches, it's still as disturbing as ever. And it's for people, it's basically like a ghost story, but it's done through this sort of faux documentary style. And it's, you know, it's interesting. You can kind of equate it to something like Paranormal Activity, but it's such a different beast because it isn't found footage. It is a documentary style. It doesn't sort of go for that sort of more cheap kind of like those gimmicks, if you will. It's tonally sticks to what it wants to be, and it goes, this is a documentary, and you know, here we go. And it's incredible. I think I heard that someone was going to remake it in the US, and it just never happened. Oof. And I was so,
thank God,
I was so not surprised that it didn't get remade, because you just know at some point an executive was like, yeah, let's not make it a documentary style. And it's well, then it ceases to be like Mungo. Yeah. And like,
then it's everything we've seen a million times. Yeah. I'm hoping no one ever touches that one. We just, we did an interview this month with, Stephen Cognetti, who, wrote and directed Hell House LLC. And, I asked him the same question, and that was his. He was just like, you know, like, go watch Lake Mungo. And I was, just, when he said it, I was like, oh my God, I love that movie so much. And it's like, too few people know about this movie, because you're right. It answers that fundamental question. Why are these cameras rolling? Which so many found footage films fail to answer that one fundamental question.
Absolutely. Well, now that someone's already brought that film up, now I've got to pick something else. I really love The Autopsy of Jane Doe. I thought that was.
Dude, you and I are just like the same. Yeah. I love that movie so much.
It's incredible. It's, I think that's probably like of the maybe last 5 years sort of horror. I think that's probably the best.
Yeah, that's an absolute gem of a movie, man. Everything about that movie is freaky as hell.
Yeah, it's such a good ending as well.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh man. I didn't even see half that coming. Yeah, like I would love to see more of that, but I also don't want them to touch it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It would just be the same story over and over again. So you can kind of like imagine what that movie is, and you don't need to make it.
And I'm good.
Save yourselves a few million dollars.
Yeah. Just keep showing this one, man. It's so unsettling. Josh, this has been so freaking amazing, man. Thank you so much for talking to us. If people want to find you online, thanks, you said you had an Instagram. Where can people follow you online?
Yeah, it's Tanner of Josh at Instagram.
Yeah. All right. Absolutely.
There's the ad symbol.
I know. Yeah. Instagram craziness. everybody should be getting off of Facebook now anyway. It's not a fun place.
Yeah. I bailed like, years ago. I think it was like 2014 or 2015.
Oh, man. You're smarter man than I. I'm trying to get out.
And Twitter, I think I bailed on Twitter last year, and it's like Instagram might stay because it's fun. Like, you can just post a picture with no caption and people are like, huh?
Oh, okay. There it is. Yeah, exactly. I'm right on board there with you. Well, Josh, thank you so much for being here on NPR Illinois. Again, please come on back with that new film when it's ready. We would love to see it and love to talk about it. So, again, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks, Jeremy.